welcome to another edition of the Micro ISV Show. I'm your co-host, Michael Lehman, along with my co-host, Bob Walsh. And today we're joined by Kevin Epstein of StupidMarketing.com and also blog.stupidmarketing.com. And so we're going to talk about marketing and its importance to micro ISVs and what you could, should, and ought to be doing on that area of business that doesn't have anything to do with writing code. Take it away, Bob.
Okay. Well, let me just add that I interviewed Kevin for my first book, Micro ISVs from Vision to Reality, I guess about 2 years ago. At that point, he was vice president in charge of marketing for VMware. And Kevin is the marketing guru type guy. This man has forgotten more about marketing than I will ever be able to learn. And I was very happy to get some time of his today to pick his brain for what micro ISVs need to know about marketing. And I guess the place to start here is, should a micro ISV have a marketing plan?
Bob, thank you for the kind words, and the answer is absolutely. One of the great failings, and having written some code myself, although I'm not sure I'm proud of it, one of the great failings in starting a technology venture is that I think inherently all of us believe that if we have a beautiful thing, the world will beat a path to our door. It's the standard adage about if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. And the truth of the matter is that if no one knows you have a better mousetrap, they're not going to be beating a path anywhere. So to borrow and mix some metaphors, I think there's a wonderful quote from Alice in Wonderland about if you don't know where you want to go, it's awfully hard to get there. You have to have a marketing plan because you're going to have to do marketing, and if you don't know what your eventual desired outcome is as far as who your customers are and how you want to reach them, you're not going to be very successful getting to them and reaching them.
Well, then maybe I should ask, what goes into a marketing plan? I've looked at various business plan books, and there's all sorts of stuff in there that, you know, I frankly don't see much of a use for, and there's some good stuff there. But what's a marketing plan versus, like, the business plan?
Great question. And you should bear in mind when buying marketing plan books, you know, being an author myself and being an author yourself, you know, we have to fill pages. So if we don't have enough good material, you don't have a book. That said, if I'm to be blunt, I'd reduce a marketing plan to two things and two things only. If you have no time and no interest in marketing, just do these two things and it should at least get you in the right direction. The first one is a very classic adage used by MBAs everywhere. It's called the 3 C's and 4 P's. And that stands for company, customers, and competitors, and product, price, promotion, being ads and what people think of as marketing, and placement, e.g. distribution. The 3 C's and the 4 P's, and then something called a SWOT analysis that stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. The first of those is a snapshot of your situation. If you look at your company, e.g. you writing code, what do you have to offer the world? Who are your proposed customers? Who are the companies or offerings that could be competitive with you, either substitutes or direct replacements? And then what will your product look like? How will you sell it? How will you get other people to know it's there? How much will you price it at? How will you attract people? So there's a snapshot using the 3 C's and 4 P's, and then an ongoing view using the SWOT analysis. What are your strengths as a company, your weaknesses as a company, and therefore the opportunities open to you and the threats, things that might stop you from happily selling product? I've found that when people write down those two types of analysis, they have a good picture of what they are, where they think they can go, and then if they take a step back and say, well, gee, this big company might be threatening me, they can turn it around and look at it as an opportunity. What does that mean about what I should do next and where I should go? So, reduced to its fundamentals, the 3 C's and 4 P's and a SWOT analysis are really the critical components of a marketing plan, and you can do that in a couple of paragraphs or a page or two of email.
Oh, you mean for each of those items?
For the entire sum, for both of those items.
Really?
You can do that in under 5 pages of typing. Most people write longer emails to their family than it would take to summarize in a sentence or two each of those things.
Well, does a marketing plan cover who you're going to try and sell to, or is it really just, you know, where you are compared to everybody else that's already selling?
I would hope that you'd start from a blank slate. So, you know, lock yourself in a room, some nice sparkling water, and stare at the wall, ideally a blank wall, color is up to you, and say, in a world that had never seen my product, what would it look like, and who should I be selling to, and why? Again, a lot of us get fascinated with technology for technology's sake, but even if we assume that there's one other person in the world like us, why would that person want to buy this product? And too often people say, well, the answer is obvious. It's just such a brilliant product. That wouldn't pass your high school English teacher if he or she said, why is this book such a great book that you read and you're doing a book report? Explain yourself. That's all a marketing plan is. That's all marketing is explaining yourself to people who you believe might have an interest in your product. So marketing as a whole is finding those people and then explaining yourself in ways that they'll understand.
Well, do you do the marketing plan before you do the product or while you're doing the product or when you're about to go out and try and sell it?
I think the answer is yes, not to be facetious, but certainly start the plan. And again, this is a classic error to reference something you said earlier. Start the plan before you've started building your product. Very, very frankly, start the plan as early as you can, because ideally you're building the product, again, not just because you think the technology is cool and neat, but because you're theoretically building a product to meet a need. So the first part of marketing would be about going and finding those customers and listening, or those potential customers, I should say, and listening to what they want. To go back to a simple analogy, simply saying, I'm going to build a car, isn't really a useful statement. Are you building a small car, a large car, an SUV, a pickup truck, a micro mini? Find the people you think you might want to sell to, and then go build what they want. John Chambers of Cisco fame had a great comment about that. He said, listen to your customers, then build it. That's how Cisco got to be the size of Cisco. So the first part of marketing and the first part of your plan involves listening. And then the second part of marketing, once you've built your product, is figuring out how to communicate back to those customers that you listened and you built what they need.
Okay. Well, let's go back over a little bit of detail there, the three C's and the four P's. Just maybe one liner there for everyone listening to this podcast so they can get the gist of what they're trying to accomplish there.
Okay? Absolutely. So if I had to describe my little authorship as a company, so stupidmarketing.com.
Yeah, let's say,
I'd say
thing,
you know, as a company, I'm an individual author who produces witticisms on marketing. My customers are early entrepreneurs who may be smart people but have minimal marketing experience. And again, an important point, this differentiates from customers who are experienced marketers and looking for detail, or who are folks who are new to the world of business at all, who might pick up an idiot's guide to marketing. So I define my customers fairly narrowly. My competitors are either better published authors or authors who have a target audience that is similar to mine. For instance, The Dummy's Guide to Marketing, which I've always found to be a somewhat offensive title. I don't think any of my audience would consider themselves dummies.
Okay.
And then as far as product price and so forth, my product is knowledge. Typically contained as a physical book, but it could also be email or an electronic book or consulting. Pricing varies. Obviously, the book would be less than consulting, and the book is cheapest on Amazon. And then promotion, I tend to let people know about my book via, originally email to colleagues who would pass it on to other colleagues, and I believe in word of mouth strongly. And then through active participation in events where initial entrepreneurs might participate.
Okay.
And then I distribute my knowledge, again, via physical book form and then electronically via a website. That's a fairly trivial example, but if you took that to someone who's writing code, it's actually pretty similar. They're both intellectual property. And someone might define their customers differently, as in people who need an email spam filter or people who need a better a desktop organization product or better media player. But then as far as competitors, you only need a line or two for each of these things that show you've thought about it. You can go on for pages, but why? You should be able in a few sentences to explain what you're doing and what who your customers are and who your competitors are, and then go into more detail as you try and find them.
What was that third C that you mentioned? I missed that one.
Company, customers, and competitors.
Okay. So, and that when you're saying company, in other words, are you going to form an LLC? Are you going to form, you know, sole proprietorship, a corporation? What type of company structure are you going to have?
Well, even simpler than that, one should always look at your company as is it something that is going to be a small thing or a large thing? Is your goal to be a lifestyle business or to go attract venture funding and grow it? Are you going to be an army of one or an army of many? Is it going to be local or is it going to be many people collaborating overseas? The essence of what your company is in some ways derives both how you can market it, to whom you can market it, and how you can then compete against other similar things. So as an individual, I would not consider competing against some of the giant marketing agencies out there as far as consulting knowledge and so forth, nor should I.
So I guess that comes over to the position P.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's go through the SWOT for a second.
Sure. So, again, SWOT standing for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And to use the individual example, as an individual, some of your strengths might be that you can react much more quickly to market conditions than a large entity. You may have specific knowledge in a specific area. You may have certain educational or professional degrees or qualifications that make you more credible. Again, very simple, strengths. What is unique and powerful, or even sometimes non-unique and powerful, about what you have in the world? Weaknesses, well, obviously the inverse of that. Opportunities, and I'll take this step back. Go to threats first. Threats are things that might prevent you from achieving your goal vis-a-vis communicating to customers. So if I'm trying to introduce a new media player, one of my weaknesses is that as an individual, I don't have the distribution mechanisms or the publicity mechanisms that a large company might have, but the strength is that I can react faster and target very specific needs of specific populations. For example, media users in universities or media users for technical documents who want very detailed three-dimensional rotational designs. The opportunities and threats are driven by who I want to go after. So if I've chosen to go after a specific technical educational audience, the opportunity may be that audience is large, that they're well-educated, that they're willing to adopt new technologies fairly easily. Threats might be that they take a very long time to decide and I don't have enough cash to wait around, or they only buy through distributors, and thus if I try and go directly, I won't be able to reach them. So threats or challenges is probably a good way to put it. And that's a quick SWOT analysis or a quick set of ideas of what might go around a SWOT analysis.
You know, the thing I'm noticing about both the 3C, 4P part of a business plan, marketing plan, and the SWOT analysis, is it seems like each time you answer one question, you're laying the seeds for another three or four questions. And then you have to go and you have to go answer those questions. There seems to be a real sort of exploratory process here.
Exactly. And the sort of thing that drives people crazy about great marketing plans is that the plan itself is, number one, not a very long document. If you have a marketing plan that's more than a few pages, you're writing too much and not doing enough of the plan. And number two, it's not a fixed document. It's not something you can write down and then say, that's my plan, and go on for a few years and never change anything. I think marketing plans should be called more like marketing black books or marketing calendars or appointment schedules. It's a deliberate technique to force you to think about what needs to happen to publicize and communicate your business, and it will change. Marketing plans over time can have a one-year view, a five-year view, and then also a few-month view and a few-week view, sometimes even a few-day view. To your point, it's almost a self-analytical process as much as it is a market analytical process.
Huh. Because, you know, I think that points up the difference between how you have to think about marketing versus how you think about your product. You know, as a programmer, you're going to write an application, be it on the web, be it desktop, whatever, mm-hmm. and your goal is to get it done with the fewest bugs, with the right features that you want to build. and then you're done. You're at 1-0, and you go forward from there. And at some point, yeah, you might revise it. You may upgrade it, but it's not a living thing. It's a static thing. You're talking more about the marketing plan to be almost more like the marketing process that you have to keep coming back to.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. And again, drawing on my own experience, I'm a sailor, and in one sense, the goal of going out in a boat is to get from point A to point B. Unless you've got very favorable winds, you can't always just point the boat at where your destination and go. Very often, you sort of know generally where you're headed, and you set off in that general direction, and then you have to tack back and forth a few times to actually reach that point. To your point about the product, one of my favorite marketing mistakes of all time wasn't a mistake. It was a 3M corporation and their Post-it notes. They set out with a goal of creating a certain type of adhesive. They technically failed, and yet, from a marketing perspective, they realized that there might be something else they could do with the product, and went and talked with their customers, who said, oh, we, the customers, have this other need that you could fulfill. Again, I personally believe that good marketing is in fact a feedback loop where you are producing product for the people you think can use it, listen to them and watch how they actually use the product, and you may end up in an entirely different place. Real Networks started as a media player company and is now arguably a content distribution company. VMware started as a tool for test and developers and has turned into something that runs on servers and is designed to consolidate data centers. Marketing should not be necessarily always driving. Marketing is both driving and driven by your product.
You know, it's hard as a programmer to get your head around the idea of what you're saying, because at least the programming I've done all my life, for adult life, I'm used to taking a specification and designing the app to deliver the specs and coding the app and game done that way. You're talking much more about it being almost like an event loop where I have to keep bouncing back and forth between what it is I want to do, and I write that up in my marketing plan, mm-hmm. and what my customers are saying they want to do with my software or website or what have you. Any advice on how to get that feedback from your customers?
Absolutely. And one of the joys of being a micro ISV is, in fact, the product is the mechanism often for marketing and feedback. From the simplest approach, where you just have a trial download and a registration page saying, how did you find me? How did you hear about me? And what do you expect to see in this product? To something much more sophisticated, where many products have embedded in them these days very detailed statistical usage that feeds back to a mothership server. These are the features of the product being used most. These are the features of the product being used least. People have changed entire product directions based on what happens when they release 1.0, and they thought that the big feature was the undo button, and it turns out that the big feature is actually the save button, or vice versa.
Okay.
So the feedback, again, doesn't have to be personal. It can be. But feedback can run from as simple as verbal and personal, be it a registration page, a blog, an email address to submit ideas from your customers, to something much more invisible, where you watch how people are using it, and you watch how where people find it. So again, if you're looking at your web page, where's your traffic coming from? If you chose Google AdWords, for example, to talk about your product, and then you look at where the actual visitors are coming from, and they're all being driven from Bob's blog, for example, then perhaps you might want to do less advertising and communication on Google and more advertising and communication to Bob and people who read similar publications or similar blogs.
Well, there's often a frustration that software designers have. And the frustration is the users are too dumb to get the idea of what the software is actually able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a case of, I guess you're thinking programmers don't think the way the rest of the world does?
So there's a classic joke in marketing that I've turned into a sign that actually sits above my desk that says, "You are not the customer." The answer to your classic programmer's dilemma, there's two things they can do. One is find smarter customers, recognizing that the portion of the world who may be as brilliant as they are and may be able to appreciate all the subtlety of the product may be a very small market. It may be a very small market, but in fact, if they find that small market, and I presume that some of the folks who built the original compilers and so forth found a small but very sophisticated market that was willing to pay a premium for great product, that's one approach. The other approach is to say, no, you know, I understand that users aren't as brilliant as I am, and they may be unable to pick up on the subtleties at first, but I'm willing to work with that. I prefer the larger, if slightly dumber, market, at which point, see sign above my desk. You're not the customer. Let the customer tell you what they want you to produce. Again, it's like going to a craft show. There are the artisans who tell you what they're going to make and sell it to you for a high price, and then there are the artisans who will listen to what you want and then build you what you want, even though it may not be entirely consistent with their artistic vision. Both businesses are fair, both have different marketing approaches and different size markets as far as the total number of people willing to pay them money.
Hmm. Okay. Let me ask it this way. Once you've got your marketing plan, the first cut of it, and I guess we're talking, you know, something like 5 pages, not 50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I know I have to keep coming back to it and looking at what I've decided and looking at what I've discovered, but what else do I do with that marketing plan?
So the joy is going from strategic to tactical. So the first of your 5-page marketing plan, the first 2 pages will be the strategic. What does my company look like, my customers, my competitors, what do I believe my product will look like, its price, how do I propose to distribute it, etc. That's all strategic. Then you go down to the tactical for the remaining 3 pages. It says, for example, I have decided, based on my available credit card limits and savings, that I am going to spend $1,000 on marketing for the next 3 months running, $3,000 in total. What is the way that I can best spend that money to communicate the message about my product to the right people? And there are a couple subtleties in that statement. Again, who are the right people? The right people are the people you've decided will be your customers. Maybe they're the technical sophisticates, maybe they're the great unwashed masses, but you need to pick one. And once you've picked that target audience, the right way to communicate to them is however they would like to be communicated to. So if your if your customer set is the technical sophisticates, and the only way that they like to be communicated to is to read postings on Slashdot, well, time to go recruit a bunch of very sophisticated other people, spend your $3,000 budget taking them out to lunch and explaining what your product does in great detail, and getting them to review you on Slashdot, and that will drive the rest of your customers to your site. Alternatively, if your audience is the great unwashed, go find out how they get their information. Maybe the way they learn about new things is via unsolicited commercial email in their inboxes. Heaven forfend, I should suggest spam. But again, whatever mechanism they use, that's how you need to spend your money.
You really have to get a good idea of who they are.
Best ways to interview a few sample ones. So, again, the technical sophisticates or the great unwashed, I suspect in everyone's family there are probably a few of each, if not in your immediate family, then in your extended family, or friends. I am a huge believer in friends and family, or sort of the cocktail party theory of focus groups. Namely, when you go to a friend's house, ask him, say, here's my example of my new product. My target market is not like either one of us. Does your significant other, friend, high school roommate, etc., do you know someone who might fit this profile? And go talk to 3 or 4 of them. Again, you're not a huge company. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars getting random people to do focus groups. As long as you pick a fairly diverse 3 or 4 people, you should, after 3 or 4 one-hour lunchtime conversations about how they learn about products like yours, where they get their news, how they chose their last desktop media player or what have you, you should have some idea of how they are susceptible to marketing or not.
Okay. Well, that tells me how to find them, but after on those three pages, mm-hmm. when I've worked up how I'm going to spend my marketing budget, let's say for the next 3 months,
mm-hmm.
How do I know if marketing works? I know that sounds like a
fantastic
question,
fantastic question.
Well, let me give you by way of example.
Yeah, go ahead,
I've seen a lot of small developers blow incredible amounts of money in advertising in various tech magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was talking to them as I did the first book, I heard a lot of people say to me, you know, I might as well just take that money and throw it on the street for all the good it did.
Mm-hmm.
How do you measure whether your marketing works?
Great, great question. And a piece of advice before I say the word about measurement, which is never start big. The amount of marketing that can be done with no money is ferociously large these days. And I would encourage everyone to start assuming that they have no money to spend on marketing, and build up from there as they discover what works. So, for example, things you can do with effectively no money are send an email to a friend describing your product and ask them to forward to four friends. Classic word-of-mouth marketing. Posting to relevant, emphasize the word relevant, blogs or forums saying, I have something new, I would appreciate feedback, please come check it out. So there are plenty of communication mechanisms in this world whereby technical folks can encourage other folks to come sample things, and then if they like it, the word tends to spread reasonably well. That said, the way you can tell if marketing is working, be it free marketing or paid marketing, is that one should examine where your purchases are coming from. You can do that either pre-purchase or post-purchase. The famous post-purchase one is the classic, thank you for buying my product, would you mind telling me how you found out about it? You have a little pull-down list. The ideally preferred pre-marketing form is when you post in each of these forums or send each of these pieces of email, or for that matter do an ad, you customize the response form. Namely, if I was going to sell my book from stupidmarketing.com, I might say in one forum, come read a sample chapter at stupidmarketing.com/... and in another forum say, come read my book at stupidmarketing.com/microISV. And based on the number of people who came in and clicked that, I'd at least get an initial sense of which forums were the richest in terms of interested customers. And then if I employed devious mechanisms such as cookies and so forth and offered things online, I might then see how many converted to purchase. It is not an exact science. There will be lost data. But as long as you can see general trends, you get a sense of where your dollars might be well spent.
You know, I think that's another area where the programmer mindset and the marketing mindset clash. Mm-hmm. As a programmer, I positively cringe when I hear the words lost data. Okay? That's the evil incarnate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Marketing people don't seem to have a problem with that. They're kind of like, well, we'll get some data and, you know, we'll kind of go with what we get.
And I'll push back a little bit there and say I think this is the difference between classic computer science engineering and my field of study, which is more raw sciences physics, which is in computer science, the bit is either a 1 or a 0. There's no intermediate state.
Yep.
In physics, Heisenberg says, you know roughly where the object is, but you don't know exactly where it is. Marketing is much closer to physics than it is to computer engineering in the sense that you can see general trends. You can see that of the people who came to your site who accept cookies, 80% came from one site and 20% came from another site. This ignores the fact that perhaps 40% of the people who came to your site don't accept cookies. You have no idea what that 40% was, and you have to sort of take a leap of faith and say, well, statistically, I'm willing to bet that they are roughly evenly split, and thus my data is not massively distorted. And you try a couple of tests from a couple of directions. You send people surveys or what have you to try and verify these things. But at the end of the day, you have to adopt a very Heisenberg uncertainty approach, which is within an order of magnitude, I believe that people are coming from this site, and thus I can't spend down to the penny, but if I had to bet my dollars, I'd spend more on that site and less on this site. and you watch what happens, especially because results change over time. Again, just like in physics, a specific method of advertising or of communicating your idea may work for a while, and then people get sick of hearing about you and ignore you on that forum, and a new forum that has never heard of you might be more productive. So again, if I was to make the analogy to programming, marketing is not like producing a 1.0 product. Marketing is like producing a plan for the 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, up through about 10. And you start building them, and then as you see the results from version 1 and version 2, what version 10 looks like may swing dramatically.
Okay. Michael, any questions?
Yeah, from the point of view of the micro ISV, you know, one of the things you were talking about is, you know, trying to do marketing early on. How much a percentage of time of all the different hats that a micro ISV has to wear do you think, if they wanted to try to do it alone, and a number of our prior guests have always recommended actually having more than one person in your company, but let's say that you're the adventurous type and you want to go off and do this by yourself, how much of a percentage of your time is it realistic to feel that you have to devote to marketing in order to be able to be successful? And I speak to this from the experience of having never really, I think, devoted a sufficient amount of percentage of my time to marketing and having reaped the results.
Yeah, touche. And I'd say that one of the horrible things about marketing is that you could easily devote 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to it, and argue that that wasn't enough. So I'll give two answers. I'll say one is the truly alone answer, and the other is the no one is truly alone answer. The no one is truly alone answer is if you have friends, colleagues, neighbors, or high school students who are available at minimal wages, all of these are people who can do marketing for you, either in the indirect sense by talking it up to their colleagues, or the direct sense, e.g., you give your high school student a list of blogs and a comment that you'd like posted on each of them, and they post the comment verbatim, and it takes them a few hours, doesn't take you any time. So that no one's truly an island. That said, if you are truly on your own, or at least on your own for the planning part, given that you have to sleep sometime, I would say that for every, and it's hard to say hours coding, but if you are not spending an hour a day at least thinking about and writing about what you want to do for marketing, you are undervaluing your own time, because you're going to end up with a great mousetrap and no one has ever heard of it. At least an hour a day, and if you can't do it personally, try and get someone who can do the tactical work, and then you could perhaps spend 2 or 3 hours on a weekend figuring out what that person will do for you during the week, and then you fire and forget and let them go do it for you.
Well, let's talk about that.
Hour a day minimum.
Yeah, an hour a day minimum. Let's talk about because a lot of micro ISVs, really, they're sort of, a lot of them tend to be not just the programmer, but programmer plus spouse, who may not have any interest in doing technical things whatsoever. They're like normal. What would you have that person be doing?
I love the programmer plus spouse combination, because spouses also serve as a great test audience for message sometimes, assuming that the message is not too technical. And I would argue, by the way, that no matter how technical your product, if you can't explain it to a non-technical person in three sentences, you're not doing good marketing.
Hear, hear.
So given that, the spouse is certainly a good sounding board for this type of message, and then they also can serve as a great marketing associate, in the sense that you say to them, well, here's my message, can you, and again, do everything from as boring and tactical as use your favorite search engine and search for blogs that talk about this type of topic. Here are the three keywords you should use. Just build a list of them for me and pull a paragraph off of each so I can quickly review and see which ones we should post in. Can you write a quick email that we could send to friends and colleagues that they can then forward to other friends and colleagues, explaining what we're doing and why we'd love them to go try a sample download? Can you edit my website for me, please? They may not know HTML, but they're probably decent at content. So spouses and partners are in my experience, having subjected my spouse, my poor spouse, to a reading of one of the early chapters, great assistance, great associates.
Okay. What are the most common marketing mistakes that micro ISVs do?
If I had to reduce it to three, and I won't restrict this to ISVs, micro ISVs, but if I had to restrict it to three, I'd say number one, betting, not planning. So to your earlier point about people who feel that they spent way too much money and couldn't measure the results, if you plan, you know who your customers are, you have some expectation of what sort of results you ought to see. Go look on, again, your favorite search engine to find out what average response rates are for advertising in different types of publications, for example. And you've spent a small amount of money to test it. That's a plan. That's a scientific approach. Betting is spending $10,000 to attend a trade show with no understanding of what you're going to walk away with at the end. So betting, not planning, is a mistake number one. Spending too much, mistake number two. Again, if you were picking a university, you'd do a decent amount of research as to the programs available and how they met your interests and talk to other people about their experiences at the university. Yet people seem willing to go to random trade magazines and, again, drop thousands of dollars without doing that level of due diligence before you spend something of high magnitude. This is an investment. Think of it as such. Ask yourself, if I spend $1,000, how many people are going to come to my site? How many of those people will try the product? And how many of those people will buy the product? Did I just make back my $1,000 or not? And last but not least, so mistake one, betting, not planning. Mistake two, spending too much without doing due diligence and research. And mistake number three, again, back to John Chambers, ignoring customers, not looking at the feedback from customers, not listening to customers. Most people in our ISV-type community are not shy with their comments if you give them a mechanism to leave you that commentary. Ignore at your peril.
I think that's a good point to wrap this up.
I agree. Well, Kevin, thank you again so much for coming on the Micro ISV Show.
Gentlemen, my pleasure. Absolutely.
And if you have any other, as I mentioned before, have any other links that you want us to include in the show post, please send them along our way.
Will do.
And people can find you over at stupidmarketing.com and blog.stupidmarketing.com.
Exactly.
And I highly recommend to them that they also read your bio. It's quite entertaining.
Oh, dear. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Micro ISV Show. I'm Michael Lehman, along with my co-host, Bob Walsh, saying come back and see us next week for another episode of the Micro ISV Show. Check out projectglidepath.net for Micro ISV evangelism from Microsoft, and clearblogging.com and mymicroisv.com to follow up on the work that Bob does. And we'll see you next time here on Channel 9.